Blog Talk Radio.
Did you always know that you were a writer?
It's hard to say. When I was a kid, I used to write. And then when I became a teenager, I didn't do much of anything.
Are you passionate about writing?
I like what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose some writers have said in print that they hated writing and it was just a chore and a burden. I certainly don't feel that way about it. Sometimes it's difficult. You know, you always have this image of the perfect thing, which you can never achieve, but which you never stop trying to achieve. But I think that at the core of it, there's this image that you have, this interior image of something that is absolutely perfect. And that's your signpost and your guide. You'll never get there,
mm-hmm.
but without it, you won't get anywhere.
When you start out to write a book, do you start out with that image?
It's not so much a conscious thing, I don't think.
Mm.
It's you always have that hope that today I'm going to do something better than I've ever done. You know?
Mm-hmm. There's the hope.
That's for hubris.
Yes, good. So do you write methodically? Do you have a schedule? You know, I've talked to many, many different writers over the years. And
No.
Or does it just come to you and you write it whenever it comes?
Faulkner once was asked if he wrote every day or only when he was inspired. And he said, I only write when I'm inspired, but I'm inspired every day.
Mm.
You have to take it seriously. You have to treat it as the work that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, do you plot everything out? And I said, no, that would be death. I mean, you can't plot things out. You just have to trust in, you know, wherever it comes from.
Welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I am your host, Richard Weissman. That was Cormac McCarthy talking about the craft of writing. And coming to you live from a hotel room in Omaha, Nebraska. And let me bring my co-host on the air with me.
Hey there, Richard.
Hey, Neutron. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Got through,
good.
I think, 48 hours of not so good. And it always amazes me that it can come on so quickly and disappear. But I don't think I've ever felt like death like that before.
Mm.
But it is showtime. I'm very impressed with your hotel room setup. It's sounding good.
Good. That's good. Yeah, I've never done this before, but I've called in as a guest from a hotel room in Newark, New Jersey, onto Pam's show, and that worked okay. So this one I had high hopes, and so far so good. I'm really glad you're back with us. You were sorely missed. I mean, we did our best without you, but, you know, it's just not the same. So glad to have you back on board.
I really do enjoy our time together. I look forward to it. It's like the highlight of my fortnight at the moment.
Me too. Okay, so I think I got Pam on hold. Let me bring her on. Hey, Pam.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Richard.
Pam.
Hi, Neutron. Good to hear you both. And, yes, it is great to have you back, Neutron.
Oh, thanks for saving my bacon last week. On the week before.
No problem.
Oh, God.
Absolutely. And I do have someone else on hold. Let me bring them on. Five, eight, five, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hey.
How
are
you doing, Laurent? How you guys doing?
Good, good. Now, I know that, and welcome, thanks for joining us. I know that you're kind of struggling. You're not in tip-top shape, but we appreciate you coming on the... we appreciate you coming on the air. And
I found
a
magic
formula. You did? Are you doing okay now?
I did. Vicks thoroughly rubbed into the chest. Vitamin C.
Yeah.
Ibuprofen.
Okay.
Chicken soup. And a pipe full of excellent herb seems to have done the trick temporarily.
Great. Okay. That's what we want to hear. We want to hear that you're feeling well because we have a glorious evening celebrating the writing of Cormac McCarthy.
Yes, sir.
And I know this was kind of a short clip and it didn't really go specifically into a lot of the nuances of his work in particular, but I thought it was a nice intro. It introduced us to his writing process and, you know, shows that he's real famous, right, because he was interviewed by Oprah Winfrey. So I thought it was a nice opener, but probably didn't leave as much room for discussion. I don't think he said anything controversial like some of our other writers have in weeks past. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, it was a real short clip. If you sneezed, you might have missed it. But I liked his Faulkner quote. I only write when I'm inspired, but I'm inspired every day. Yeah. So with that, Neutron, I know we've got a board full of poetry. So I am turning
we do
it over
indeed.
To you. Okay.
Okay, so first up we've got a poem by Benjamin, and Pam, if you could give it a read, that'd be great.
Sure, I'd be happy to. All right. The sun rises slower, the dust settles faster, and everything seems out of place by Benjamin. The sun was slow to rise today, and I told it, take your time, because I'm happiest when it's dark and quiet. I guess that means I could prosper in a basement or be the last one standing in a Stephen King movie. I'd have it be 4 a.m. forever if I could, but work starts at 7 when traffic is atrocious and the birds can't stop arguing over which jogger to crap on. I went running at 5 and noticed Venus was up as well as the planet shadowing it. They were horizontal from each other like they were about to have a shootout. I'd never seen anything like it unless the Twilight Zone counts. After 2 miles, I stopped to give my knee a break, which I strangled with a knee sleeve before putting on my sweats. And that's when it occurred to me, more than it's ever occurred to me, this life just isn't real. The dirt path I'm on is the private property of a long-term deja vu. And this sweat on my neck is programmed to drip. These short, shallow breaths my lungs are fabricating is just the static from a record player. The record's been over for who knows how long, and nobody's there to move the needle. End poem.
Great read, Pam. So that was inspired by prompt 10. You think when you wake up in the morning, yesterday don't count, but yesterday's all that does count. What else is there? Your life is made out of all the days, of the days. And it's made out of nothing else. And it's from old country, No Country for Old Men. So I really like this one. I have a big comment that I've already done. And, okay, it's pretty similar to what I was going to just say off the top of my head, so I'll go ahead and read. This dirt path I'm on is the private property of a long-term deja vu. And I loved where Evangeline went with that prompt, the deja vu, Twilight Zone vibe, the deadpan humor, all left me with that unsettling feeling that matches McCarthy's writing so well. And what I especially liked is McCarthy actually has publicly said that he's not much for magical realism, that the real world is tough enough for him to write about. All well and good, but I do think that there's something in his realism that is just so eerie and so surreal. He shows us how real life and its struggles are almost surreal. And I think that Banjolin captured that quite beautifully in her poem. So great job. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah. The part that you mentioned is their Fathomon, is the point at which I realized that where I thought this poem was going, didn't. Because he's happiest when it's dark and quiet. I guess that means I could prosper in a basement. I'd have it be 4 a.m. forever if I could. So during his run, I figure, all right, he's going to establish that this is his world. When he's up at 5, noticing the Venus, etc., came that moment when I realized that it's not that at all. He's duplicating 1,000 times, 5,000 times that other people have done the same way, the same time frame, and it's just static from record player, which has been playing for who knows how long. Nobody's there to move the needle or change the storyline. It's that permanent deja vu. That's a great perspective based on the problem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I thought this was so seamlessly written, almost a stream of consciousness. And I felt like Banjolin took us on a journey, and it attacks some complex philosophical takes on the prompt. But I don't know, with Banjolin's work, it always seems to be delivered with this effortless, elegant simplicity. And I was drawn to that section, these short, shallow breaths. My lungs are fabricating, and it's just the static from a record player. Their record's been over for who knows how long, and nobody's there to move the needle. Just so well put.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as our reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought this was an excellent write all the way through. I like how it touches on the peace and the beauty that comes in the night hours, but that it also gives that idea of how life can feel like the same things happening over and over again. I particularly like the lines that had a touch of humor in them, well, you know, where it goes, I guess that means I could prosper in a basement or be the last one standing in a Stephen King movie. Those lines definitely made me smile. And I love how she has such keen observations about everyday life. And so excellent writes and very well done.
Absolutely great comment there, Pam. And with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next one, Neutron.
Okay, so I'll give this one a read by Stelina, and it's called Scars of Life. It was written to the prompt, Scars have the strange power to remind us that our past is real from all the pretty horses. So it begins. My scars are a testament to my life, yet not all are visible. Some are still weeping and raw, while others, though long healed, still ache from time to time with unrelenting remembrance. The past taunts me with its tenacious memories, its weapons of regret, remorse, and woe. My scars are lessons learned in the school of life, an A-plus in hard knocks. Sometimes, to be revised so as not to forget and start all over again. Yet without these scars, how would I sail stormy sea? They are my life preservers, keeping me afloat with their wisdom, guiding me to shallow, serene waters where I whisper, you won't get me this time. End poem.
Nicely read there, Neutron. And Laurent, if we can start comments off with you.
I really like the line, I like the whole thing, but the line, the past haunts me with its tenacious memories, because of regret, remorse, and woe. some of his scars are still weeping and raw, as he says, as she says, excuse me. Others are long healed, but without those scars, how would I sail stormy seas? I mean, you learn from life, and life hands you scars, real and metaphorical, and they are the guarantors that we will survive if we do not forget them. Because, as the poet says, what I whisper, you won't get me this time. So she means it. She's had her lesson. Great piece.
Amen. Yeah, I too really like that. That same segment, about these scars. How would I sail stormy seas? They are my life preservers, keeping me afloat with their wisdom, guiding me to shallow, serene waters where I whisper, you won't get me. I think she captured McCarthy's persevering mindset, his optimism tempered by mistakes, pain, and suffering. I thought it was raw and inspirational. Just a great piece of writing. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this right all the way through. I like how she reminds us that scars aren't just physical, and on the same person, within the same person, different scars can be in different process or, you know, of healing. And I really like the mention of getting the A+ from the hard knocks of life. And so excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And as our reader, Nitra, I'll give you the final word.
I really think Selena danced well between imagery and feelings, and it was a heartfelt answer to the prompt that I mentioned earlier. I was drawn to the same section as Laurent, actually. The past taunts me with its menacious memories, its weapons of regret, remorse, and woe. And I think, Pam, what you mentioned there about invisible scars is exactly right. Just from personal experience myself, I think sometimes those invisible scars are harder to heal than the physical ones. So very well done, Selena.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for submitting it for us. And Neutron, where are we going next?
Okay, so I have a poem by Poetic Picasso, and Richard, if you could read this one, that would be great.
Absolutely. So this is called A Justifier by Poetic Picasso, and it goes like this. Before the advent of the gods, there was nothing but our imagination, and superseded by the need to occupy our minds with preternatural divinities, and our imagination enhanced this notion of primal superiority and belief, where it ultimately created fables and tales of ancient mysteries evoked. Before the gift of life, there was nothing but a film of drifting emptiness, a caliginous chasm of the universe that had no refulgent light, only fire. Yet mankind evolved from this eerie shadow of sulfur and molten lava to allow his thought to be imbued by the inquisitive seed of his creativity. From within this brimstone, there were no gods, but our will to survive. And the world was dark and dreary in its perceived composition. It never ceased to exist as we had not ceased to exist as well. For the world was painted in many kaleidoscopic colors of patency. Man had stained and soiled the earth with his pretentious whims of deceit before there were selfish wars, destruction, and contamination displayed. Created from the womb of illusion, the children of Adam were born. From among the winds of time rose a lone man named Prometheus. He was not the savior of mankind, no God, only the face of our humanity, a prophet, not of ultramundane legends, but a justifier that was of mortal flesh. End of poem. And Laurent, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was a great piece. I really liked the ending. He was not the savior of mankind, no God, only the face of our humanity, a prophet not of ultra-mundane legends, but a justifier that was of mortal flesh. I've often wondered how we so often tempt the gods at our peril, don't we? You know, he Prometheus defied the gods, turned around and tried to give it to humanity in a way that would benefit them, which is why I like that line, but from amongst the winds of time rose a lone man named Prometheus. That sounds so laden with weight, so heavy, like a proclamation, like a god himself, a prophet not of ultramundane legends, but a justifier that was of self, flesh, and justifier of what I would assume is existence.
Nicely done, yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to take a moment to thank Frank for writing to the show. I used to have the pleasure of reading lots of his poetry when I wasn't so busy with work. I'd read his stuff on Friday night, and nice to have him back on board here. I thought the pen was chock full of literary allusions and myths. Truly a wonderful invocation of Promethean fire brought right into our hearts, a call to creativity and to embodying our highest selves. It's great work. Oh, and by the way, this was to the prompt, there is no God and we are his prophets, which is one of my favorite McCarthy quotes. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was really impressed with this piece. I think depending on your spiritual beliefs, it could be quite a contentious read. But for me, I think he captured the prompt really well. It was a cohesive write. It flowed really well. I really enjoyed the reference to Prometheus. And as Laurent mentioned there, it is firmly based in Greek mythology. And I just thought it was very interesting that he used Prometheus to pull this prompt and the right together in the vein that Prometheus gave humanity technology, knowledge, and more generally civilization in mythology. And it brought the concept home very well. Thought-provoking poem, but nuanced, and it strikes the drum without tearing the drum skin. So I was very impressed.
Absolutely, great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like how this one was a thought-provoking poem. I liked how, to me, the main theme comes across as the idea of how people are often creatures of greed and violence, and that oftentimes they tend to make up the rules that most comfort them. And this was really quite a strong write all the way through. But, you know, I did particularly like those last few lines with the mention of Prometheus. He was not the savior of mankind, no God, only the face of our humanity. The idea of one person trying to help other people. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron.
Thanks, Richard. So we have a SoundCloud up next by Art Junkie.
Okay, I got it.
It's as simple as that. Presence is a tug on string tied to my rib bone, flutter of wing inside my center. I carry you with me, my purpose for morning, my reason for night. There's no light between us, so close despite 1,000 miles. You're here with me, breath on my neck, hand on my back, voice of my heart. When you die, I'll die. It's as simple as that.
Thank you for the SoundCloud Art Junkie. Great work. That was inspired by the quote from The Road, prompt 3. What would you do if I died? And then the man replies, if you died, I would want to die too. And the boy says, so you could be with me? The man says, yes, so I could be with you. And the boy says, okay. Great example of a layered poem. I appreciated the good ambiguity of you. As with the Song of Solomon, it could refer to a lover, a friend, a higher power, or a higher self. And beyond that, I also liked how it could be an acknowledgement of the truth of interdependency or of unhealthy codependence. So nicely done there. Thanks for bringing it to us. And Pam, what'd you think?
This was a beautifully written poem, and like all the poems in the contest, I'd read it earlier, and I kept going back and forth because, you know, the first part and the end, there were parts of it that made me think of pregnancy, you know, the flutter of a wing inside my center. I carry you with me, my purpose for morning, my reason for night. And so it had me thinking of pregnancy and a child, but then you're here, despite 1,000 miles difference, you're here with me, breath on my neck, hand on my back, voice of my heart, had me thinking of a lover. And that's ultimately the way I decided to go, was the whole idea of a love that feels close, no matter the distance. And I like how you mentioned there, Richard, that it could also be the idea of a higher power. Just absolutely a beautifully written poem and very well done.
Absolutely. I like that, the pregnancy thing. I hadn't thought of that, but I really like that from the first stanza. Great interpretation. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, someone who loves so deeply that they are, their presence is inside of them, and so beautifully produced in that first stanza. Presence was a tug on string tied to my rib bone, flutter of wing inside my center. That tugging and fluttering works very, very well for me, because that is, I think, a very accurate description of what one feels inside when they think of a beloved. And despite distance, they're as close as ever. And should you die, I will die. There's a wonderful take on the prompt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I thought the imagery in this was so heartfelt yet strong. And it almost brought to mind a hummingbird tied to one's heart. I immediately wanted to riff off of this poem by Art Junkie. And it inspired me greatly. Laurent, on a side note, we have selected the same section out of 4 poems so far. So in tune tonight, that's for sure. So, and I just, I have to say, like, the great thing about these shows is that you really do get the different interpretations, the unique interpretations from the poem. And I really think in this instance, as you said, Richard, it points to the layered nature of the poem. And it's always good to dissect a meaty poem. So well done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great point. Okay, and with that, where would you like to go next?
So I'm going to get Laurent up next, just in case he needs to bow out early because of his unwellness. So when you're ready,
yep.
Laurent.
Thank you. This is called A Fierce Bondage of Numbers. It's Excuse me one second. Bondage of numbers. In a midnight state of fugue, he witnessed an eclipse of mysteries and realized the 12 houses no longer held answers. Signs had blurred, stars shifted in an interval of cosmic madness. Nothing around him was the same. An entity visited him in the dream form of a great eye that blinked, a blind seer who had lost his sight. Within this dreamscape, entrails no longer forecast the state of crops at harvest or a bride's hidden pregnancy. Bones that rolled shattered on impact, rolling no more. Lady Luck had been disrobed, a flash of pink bosom and a tuft of dark thatch visible to the modesty of hands. The stuttering of a thought broke free from his unconscious. Science held sway. Quantum figures, the dildo of numbers, was screwing us at will, adding and subtracting from realities crafted by belief. Math had awoken, slaughtered superstition, held its bloody head high, thrown it in the mud where luck lay, slain by a fierce bondage of numbers. The matrix flowed in rivers of atomic truth, and he felt himself drowning, pulled under, without any secret eyes to lament his dissolution. Anton.
Great read, Ron. So I do have someone on hold. Let me bring them on the air. 763, you're on the radio.
Hey, it's Dexter. Glad I could make it.
Hey, Dex. Welcome aboard.
Hey!
So did you have a chance to hear Laurent's poem?
I did. And, you know, I just feel like it's another one of those, you know, it's further proof on or a lot of me and Laurent see eye to eye on quite a bit, I think, because it just seems like one of those things where I know I've heard Laurent do almost anti-religious rites, but then at the same time, I've heard this kind of rite from Laurent too, and it's almost like that stuck in between, because you know you could sit there and be in science and be in numbers, but you lose your belief, you lose your humanity within all of that. And so it's like, where do you fall in between and in this whole landscape of things on what there really is? You know, and it's just hard to believe that it's just all numbers. And I think that Laurent captures that so well. So great, right?
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really love this. I mean, the story of our losses, magic, of innocence, was brought home with those lines, within this dreamscape, entrails no longer forecast the state of crops that harvest, or a bride's hidden pregnancy, bones that roll shattered on impact, rolling no more, Lady Luck had been disrobed. I thought it was the compelling retelling of the birth of our fierce bondage of numbers. And interestingly enough, on the second read, I got the nod to No Country for Old Men, the focus on luck and how the villain rolls the dice in order to determine is he going to kill them or makes them roll the dice in order to determine is he going to kill them or is he going to let them go. So I don't know if that was intentional, but I caught that on the second time round. Bravo. Great job.
Happy accident.
See that? That worked. Our subconscious is just tuned right in there to the collective unconscious. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I had to actually look up Fuge, and it is exactly, Laurent, as you have depicted in the first stanza in creative form. Rather than a change in cities, it seems to be a move from superstition to science, almost a change in thought process to the disrobing of Lady Luck. Although for some, science may as well be superstition, and just in Australia at the moment, if you look at the response to climate change, it's not far from those 12 houses of superstition. My favourite part was bones that rolled, shattered on impact, rolling no more. Lady Luck had been disrobed, a flash of pink bosom and a tuft of dark thatch visible through the modesty of hands. Amazing.
Thank you.
Absolutely great comment. And Pam, I will give you final word.
All right. Well, this is just an excellent write all the way through, just strong imagery and metaphors. I like how you give the different references to the different kinds of way people used to try to predict the future, the reading of the sheep's entrails, the tossing of the bones. I like how this kind of spoke on to me on the idea of how we gamble and take chances based on numbers, but sometimes life doesn't always go exactly as the numbers show. Sometimes there's an exception to every rule. I really liked the stuttering of thought broke free from his unconscious sides, held sway quantum figures. You know, that whole stanza and the matrix flowed in rivers of atomic truth and he felt himself drowning. Sometimes we just find ourselves drowning in what we thought could save us. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, Neutron, with that, I'm turning it back to you.
Fantastic. So we've got a SoundCloud by Weaver of Dreams up next.
Okay, let me pull that.
When I was a child, all I ever wished was that my mother would love me. As I grew, that hope became a memory. As a child, I couldn't understand my crime. As I grew, I knew I'd robbed her of her life. As a child, when she left me, I cried. As I grew, I hated that I loved her still. I'm no longer that unhappy, unwanted child. Between the witch and the world, she failed.
Thank you, Weaver of Dreams, for the SoundCloud. Always appreciate it. And if we can start comments off with Laurent, what'd you think?
Well, this one will tear right at your heartstrings. Because children do grow up believing that if their parents are angry at them, they're the ones who are at fault. They're the ones who committed some crime. And then to have it finished, I'm no longer that unhappy, wanted child. That's the realization, of course, that I think is inspired by Prompt 12. But the heavy line, the last line, between the wish and the world, she failed. That is the realization. The person who has conquered their demons come to understand that they are not the reason for the failure, but that the other person was the reason all along. It really resonates with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in such few lines, amazing, right? That's what I thought. I thought that it was just remarkable how much it was accomplished in such a brief poem, packed with pathos, the unfulfilled wish for a mother's love, weighing like a boulder, painfully good, really well done. Neutron, I'm going to give you final word on this one.
Yeah, I thought this was emotive and raw. On a personal note, it was almost like a sliding doors moment. For me, it would be nice to unleash my progeny on the world, but I think personally I would be too inconsistent to bring a child into this world. And when I read this, it's a reality check. We are not asked to be brought into this world. And I'm so very glad for the last two lines. I'm no longer that unhappy, unwanted child between the wish and the world. She failed. Great.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, let's go for our next piece.
Okay, so we have another SoundCloud up next by S. Sharp, mm-hmm. Humanity Shades Darkness.
Okay, let me pull that one. Humanity. This one.
Humanity Shades Darkness. The cold breath of humanity bristles the fine hair upon one's neck as the calculus turns in the gray light to serve injustice as a last meal of sanity, of light. For the only consistency is humanity's shadow. One dark event shades the next. Christ nailed upon the cross. Sacrifices for forgiveness. The Crusades deliver heretics their due. Intolerance wrapped as justice, one man better than the next. I bring you the Black Death, witch hunts, persecution of Jews chopped to pieces to cure the plague. Forced servitude across the globe builds the next future. Salem, witch trials, in the name of religion, kill them all. Trail of tears, obstacles of advancement moved. World wars, the Holocaust, the great Chinese famine, the Holodomor, Roman, Catholic, sex abuse, Khmer Rouge, torture and murder of millions, Rwanda, Chechnya, Bosnia. Darkness shades darkness, shades darkness, shades darkness, shades darkness.
Great SoundCloud. Thanks so much there, Scott. Dex, if we could start comments off with you.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic journey through time. You know, they say that, you know, human beings have been around for X amount of years, and really our anatomy and our brains and things have not changed that very far over the years. And the things that we thought of to be insane are just so dark and so inhumane that happened at this time really wasn't that long ago. And he takes us kind of through a great journey of that. And things that we, you know, we would claim as such injustice seem to keep circulating and to keep happening. And it might be just because of the shades of darkness that us as human beings continue to have. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think this was such a well-thought-out, thought-provoking answer to the prompt. It's quite a long prompt. He walked out in the gray light and stood, and he saw for a brief moment the absolute truth of the world, the cold, relentless circling of the intestate earth, darkness implacable. The blind dogs of the sun in there running, the crushing black vacuum of the universe, and somewhere 200 animals trembling like ground foxes in their cover. Borrowed time and borrowed world and borrowed eyes with which to sorrow it. The repetition at the end mirrors the repetition in the prompt, and it was very powerful. And I feel that the cadence of the piece builds in momentum as you progress, like a horse with the gallops almost. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And yeah, just as an aside, I wanted to include a couple of prompts from Cormac McCarthy that showed the poetry within his prose, because although he's a storyteller, his work is so lyrical. So I felt it would be an injustice just to do a couple of kind of quote prompts without giving you a taste of that. So I was happy that that Scott took us up on the challenge to write to that prompt. And I, too, was very impressed by it. I thought he really nailed it right from the open with this prompt. It's inconsolable darkness, proven through his litany of injustices from Christ on the cross to modern genocides of Rwanda, Chechnya, Bosnia. Powerfully delivered through the SoundCloud. It's a wonderful piece. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a powerful write all the way through. I like how he takes us through the so many of the atrocities of history that were done in the name of religion. And there was a kind of a lyrical quality to this, to the read, that I have to agree with Neutron that there was a buildup of intensity that was had especially had an impact with the repetitiveness of Shades of Darkness, as the Shade Darkness last three lines. Just a very hard hitting and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Well, I'm going to get Pam up next when you're ready.
Okie dokie. This is The Saints of Battle and Chewing Gum, and it goes like this. The Saints of Battle marched across a cardboard horizon. He sipped foam and chewed on memories of jungle lore and bullets. He believed in God. He also believed he was the biggest SOB to ever exist. Only the good die young, a quote that was filled with the same lies as any other chattering. He had seen death hit good and bad alike. It didn't matter how many old ladies you helped across the street, blood still splattered in wild abandonment, and lost limbs still felt phantoms of pain. He was the type of man who liked to keep to himself. Conversation was barbed wire on his tongue. But here came old Walter with his love of blackjack gum and political rants. There was no getting away. His joints hurt too damn much, and guilt weighed him down. So let the onslaught of words leak from between putrid teeth. He would simply nod and smile and think about the days of incense, lava lamps, and free love, the days before war became a pickpocket slipping fingers between his ribs. End poem.
Great read, Pam. If we can start with Laurent, your thoughts.
I really enjoyed this one, Pam. The Saints of Battle marched across the cardboard horizon. I don't think it's checkers, but it definitely could be chess. He sipped foam and chewed on memories of jungle lore and bullets. I'm sitting there thinking, this is a man well along in years, a former warrior himself. I don't assume it's chocolate foam, could be beer, probably. He believed in God, but he believed he was the biggest SOB to exist. And I mean, I love the phrase, only the good die young, which sounds very good, but it is obviously not true at all. And he understands that no matter how good you are in life, it doesn't help. Your time has come. Your time has come. And though he liked to keep to himself, here comes old Walter. There's no getting away from old Walter because his joints hurt too damn much. Guilt weighs him down, the guilt of not listening to Walter, who probably needs to because he loves his political rants. So he suffers the onslaught of words. Thinks back to the 60s, about the days of incense, lava lamp, and free love. The days before war became a pickpocket, slipping fingers between his ribs. That's exactly what will happen. It'll steer your heart. It'll steer people that you know. It might steal a love. It might steal a country away from you. Just, I don't know, this really spoke to me, Ben. I think it's a wonderful one.
Thank you, Lauren.
Great comment, Laurent. Yeah, Pam, I really love this piece as well. He would simply nod and smile and think about the days of incense, lava lamps, and free love, the days before war became a pickpocket slipping finger between its ribs. I think you really captured McCarthy's poetic desolation, a voice crying in the postmodern wilderness full of sound and fury, the struggle of that voice trying not to signify, pardon the double negative, but nothing. And I thought it was just a beautiful poem, one of my favorites by you. Thanks so much for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it had just a great, on top of what everybody had said, I thought it had a great change of tone that was almost midway that also brought on, you know, it felt like almost in as if in yesterday, you know, in years previously, this person was almost, you know, a hero. This person was this person with that. But in modern days, this person is somewhat kind of an asshole. And things have switched on this one. And I felt like that was kind of expressed greatly in tone. In how the cultural view of these people, whether or not it is fair or not, has switched from you being a warrior, from you being a battle, you know, this and that, you know, and you're an American and you're this. Things have switched on you, and now your political rants can be kind of very unwanted, I guess, to say the least. But very well done, Pam.
Thank you.
Great comment there, Dex. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I'm so impressed with this poem. I don't know, Pam, like the thing is, with your writing, you have this conversational, effortless tone. And it was quite a philosophical take on the chosen prompts. I believe you tackled too. I was drawn to this section here. The saints of battle marched across a cardboard horizon. He sipped foam and chewed on memories of jungle lore and bullets. I'm just in awe of the way you've crafted this offering for the show. There's a level of authenticity and sensibility to the thoughts expressed within it, and it's so very well penned.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next one.
Right. So if I could get Dex to read the next poem by Sidney Pierce.
Of course. This is God's War by Sidney Pierce. A curse, these endless wars, going on without consent, from the soldiers bearing arms. I curse this heritage of which I've been. It's informed and tricked into believing nothing blooms in this soil when it's covered in blood and ash. No babies are born from the wombs of women cast aside in favor of bloodshed and dominance. This is God's war that never ends and began with the birth of man. He is calm in this heaven, in his heaven, and all is well with the worlds below. His blood-stained fingers beckon us home. We are powerless to resist. We are puppets on frayed strings, and we will dance until they break. End poem.
Nicely read there, Dex. Thanks so much. And Laurent, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I really like the poem. I'm a little uncertain as to whether the poet is saying this is God's war that never ends, or this is man's war that in God's name that never ends, because it seems to me that would be the truth. Although Sidney may be using sarcasm, "He is calm in heaven and all is well with the world below. His bloodstained fingers beckon us home." Is he saying there that God is actually the purveyor of these things, or once again, using a little bit of sarcasm to imply that, well, God's war is man's war?
Yeah, right. I kind of caught that ambiguity as well. Yeah, his blood-stained fingers beckon us home. We are powerless to resist. We are the puppets on fraying strings, and we will dance till they break. That is a poignant and lyrical brevity, heartbreaking comedy, and commentary on the sad reality of war. I also like war as metaphor for the human struggle. This is God's war that never ends and began with the birth of man. Nicely done. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Well, I think it was quite thought-provoking, and judging by the responses to the poem, that just reinforces that altogether. It was written to the prompt, "It makes no difference what men think of war," said the judge, "war endures." So I think I'm leaning towards maybe a hint of sarcasm or coy humor in relation to it being man's war rather than God's war. And I think that she's conveyed quite a lot in a small word count. I was really drawn to this section here. "Nothing blooms in this soil when it's covered in blood and ash. No babies are born from the wombs of women cast aside in favor of bloodshed and dominance." So not only does it draw you to the fact that there's a loss of life through war, but there's also a loss of life from people not being able to get on with living their lives too. Very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment. And Pam, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is a wonderful thought-provoking write. Very visceral imagery. I like how it kind of takes a look at war being this big machine and this handler of the strings that controls the spirit of humanity and the way it destroys it. You know, we are powerless to resist. We are the puppets of fraying strings was just an excellent line and a great poem, very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Okay, so Richard, I'm going to get you up next, so if you'd just like to introduce the poem and then have a read, that would be great.
Absolutely. So, yeah, this was inspired by one of my favorite novels by McCarthy, which is The Road. And the quote is, "What's the bravest thing you ever did? He sat in the road, a bloody phlegm. Getting up this morning," he said. And that inspired me to write a poem called This Morning. Away slipped yesterday's coveted ivory pearls. The tighter I grasped, the quicker they fell to fathomless ocean floor. I wanted, no needed wholeness, which came wrapped in that lifelong pearly pursuit. So I wept and slept, broken among the jagged gray shoreline rocks. The salty trickling of red filled dawn's mouth till I spat a bloody phlegm. Gingerly, I craned my head, neck, torso, away from last night's meek impression, which desecrated these pure white sugar sands, while gulls mocked my still arcing crown. From here, crumpling forward, jack-in-the-box-like, felt easier than pushing further. Still, up I clawed, gainst elongating shadows of broken dawn, despite wobbly knees and tattered dreams, and stood marble statue tall to face this pitiless day. End poem.
Excellent, Richard. I was drawn to this section here. Away slipped yesterday's coveted ivory pearls. The tighter I grasped, the quicker they fell to fathomless ocean floors. It was such a great opener to a truly cohesively written piece. There was unique imagery, a great answer to the chosen prompt. On a side note, I really enjoy your writing. It's the perfect combination of grit and language that just caresses the soul. And I learned so much from you as both a co-host and poet. Great write.
Thanks, Neutron. I learned from you too. You know, it's just a great experience. Great experience doing this every 2 weeks with you guys. So
it is, isn't it?
I am humbled by your presence.
Oh, you're too much. Now let's get you some comments. So, Dex, what were your thoughts?
I thought that this one really stood out to me, Richard. Having been somebody that has struggled with addiction and alcohol, you know, ism, this seemed, I really kind of attached this and associated this almost kind of with alcohol, and in those nights when you're with your friends, you think, you know, is this what life's all about? Isn't this the connection that we've all been searching for? But at the same time, it's pushing you further and further from the goals that you wish to achieve, maybe the sober mind in the day before. And so you're caught in this kind of war, or whatever you want to say, in this kind of this battle. And I felt like you captured that here very well. Now, I could be wrong on my interpretation of it, but I just thought that this was perfectly done between that battle of if I should give a shit too much or give a shit too less or whatever. So I thought this was a fantastic write.
And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just, it's raw, it's gritty. I like how it takes on the suffering that often comes in the morning and with age. I like the mention of the coveted ivory pearls and the lifelong pearly pursuit. I felt, you know, there was kind of two thoughts there. Is one, the idea of how with age we lose, oftentimes lose our teeth, and then also the idea of kind of pursuing that end reward. I really like how visceral the imagery got with the salty trickling of red filled Dawn's mouth till I spat a bloody phlegm. And you can just see the harsh way that the body reacts, and how this isn't just about the weariness of the body, but also the weariness of the mind, and how difficult it can be to face a new day when all you want is for life to be over with. So excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam, and thanks to you, Dex, too. I was struggling with the mute button there.
Oh, that's all right. And I'll give Laurent final words on the poem.
Powerful piece, my friend, powerful piece. There are very few things that are more difficult than to stand up to the bright light of a new day when you're filled with pain and expected somehow to persevere. The things, you know, we lose the things that complete us at our own peril. I wanted and no needed wholeness, which came wrapped in that lifelong pearly pursuit. And yet, through all of that, you must have the strength to stand marble tall to face this pitiless day. What was that line you used? Still I clawed against elongating shadows of broken dawn. That's that new day that you have to face. And when you can stand up like a marble statue, tall, hard, to face the pitiless day, that is very much one of the bravest things somebody can do. I thought it was deeply moving, and I thought your words are sourced from your heart and mind most exquisitely.
Thanks so much, Laurent. Okay, and with that, Neutron, I am turning it back to you for our next piece.
Okay, so I've got Lord of Beads next, and Laurent, are you okay to read this one?
Sure. There we go. This is A Reason Without a Reason by Lord of Beads. It makes no difference what men think of God. The world is moving towards a new mod, but prejudice makes educated people fools, closing their eyes and attacking all opposing beliefs and their goals. Our brains are caught up in the religious nets, saying that the empty set hated all the sets. There is no God, and we are his prophets, like black holes. We are full of protests. Fears of a strange power that reminds you that your future is fake. You believe what you want to deny, and you deny what you want to believe. Whatever in you exists without your knowledge exists without your consent. Between your chance and your choice, you conceive naive dreams. Sometimes not choosing makes your best chance. And
great read, Laurent. So I love how he worked in the themes of faith, chance, and free will, which in No Country for Old Men is actually personified by a figure. And I liked how the poem works, whether you know McCarthy's work or not. So very nicely crafted, very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, firstly, a commendation for integrating such a varied selection of prompts into what I thought was quite a cohesive write. That is difficult in and of itself. I was drawn to our brains are caught up in the religious net, saying that the empty set created all the sets. There is no God, and we are his prophets. Like black holes, we are full of protests. As Richard would say, you riffed with the prompts in a philosophical manner. It is easy to get caught up in the dogma that surrounds religious practice and forget the intent to create harmony and empathy amongst humankind rather than serving as a pillar to reinforce one's prejudices. I thought it was a really clever job.
Great comment there, Neutron. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic write. And, you know, it's this idea of falling in line and, you know, the new mod, the prejudice and educated people and this idea that we, you know, have to succeed. This is a very Bukowski kind of poem and almost in the idea of his quotes or whatever from his book, and from his movie, but we're always pressured to succeed. We're pressured to succeed. Well, what does that really mean? You know, what is the reason? And here we are caught into this net and the amount of damage that is done to us. Your future is fake and what you believe in, and to come to this realization that the poet has come to. I don't know. I just thought that this was a very profound write.
Absolutely. Great comment. So I think I've got Bobby on hold, so let me bring her on. Bobby, is that you?
It is.
Welcome.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
My dinner guest finally went home.
we're glad you could join the party here. Our Cormac McCarthy party. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful write. I like how the main theme and idea that spoke to me, it was the idea of how fears lead people to attack the unfamiliar. I really did like those lines. Fears have a strange power that reminds you that your future is fake. You believe that you want what you want to deny, and you deny what you want to believe. There's powerful lines there and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
So I'm going to be cheeky and chuck mine into the fold. So I'll give it a read now. So it's called The Devil in the Detail, and it was written to another Cormac McCarthy quote. I think if you were Satan and you were sitting around trying to think up something that would just bring the human race to its knees, what you would probably come up with is narcotics. And it goes like this. We are the lab rats that strike the buzzer, our beady eyes implore the coca leaves to traverse a well-traveled neural pathway. We learn the maze to the buzzer, deprived of wafer-thin slices of pecorino cheese and hydration. For what? For that escalating high, solely focused on seeking hedonistic, homogenized landscapes, till it does not work anymore. Neg raving, the beginning of the journey, wrapped in rehabilitation like cotton wool. It brings us to our collective knees, the ache tearing through joints. The devil, my friend, is in the detail. End poem.
Great read there, Neutron. What a powerful poem. Casting of a cold eye on addiction and even on recovery. I thought this was a skillful exposition of the other pandemic, the one from which there is no vaccine. Skillfully woven throughout, I truly felt it. The maze, the buzzer, the cheese, till it does not work anymore. Neg raving, the beginning of the journey, wrapped in rehabilitation like cotton wool. Wow, really great. Okay, so let's get you some comments. Bobby, your thoughts.
Oh, Neutron knows I love her writing. This is really quite a skilled write. I love the analogies you draw in here and the metaphors. We are the lab rats that strike the buzzer. And we learn the maze to the buzzer, deprived of wafer-thin slices of pecorino cheese and hydration. And it asks the very pertinent question, you know, why do we do this? Wrapped in rehabilitation like cotton wool brings us to our collective needs. It's, you're right, though. It is such a scourge, and it seems like when people fall into that abyss, it's rare that they are able to claw themselves out, and it seems like it's a sad waste of humanity, but unfortunately for so many people, it's an escape, and it's very sad, but this is extremely well done.
Amen. Great
Thank
comment.
You.
And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, this write was hit me very, very hard. It was very almost difficult to listen to. I mean, it really captured the devil in the detail, and it really shows the devil and that man was able to bring this out. I mean, I'm almost kind of speechless from this write. Thought it was very well done, Neutron.
Thanks, Nick.
Great comment, Zach. And Pam, I'm going to give you final words.
Yeah, this is amazing. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like the idea. Well, first of all, I really like the quote you chose and the idea people being the lab rats and how oftentimes, you know, offered that little taste that offers up the that first taste that leads on to that path of addiction. And I really like fully focused on seeking hedonistic, hominogenized landscapes till it does not work anymore. The idea of finding that cure-all for everyone and then realizing it doesn't work for everyone. So powerful, right, and very well done, Neutron.
Thanks, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, and with that, Neutron, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so I've got a poem here by Greg Gall, and Richard, I was hoping you could give it a read.
Okay, so this is Kissed My Bride by Greg Gall. It goes like this. Alone, I angle to her open pine box, set atop the stately dining table. There she lies, as if she could now see. Naked, darkly, she stares up at me. Full chestnut hair, freshly flown by mythic breeze. For 2 hours, she has waited breathlessly. Her lips purse like an ingenue, seductively. Does one's death render the final order? I then lean in to kiss her lips. One sweet kiss from me will be her telling gift for all eternity. With breathy coy coaxing, she begs me in. I have no faith that my kiss can set us free. Her breasts are still supple and poised. My tears trickle towards her tiny waist. Her back is slightly bowed, just so. Both legs draped away like lingerie. I slip my sobbing spike gently in to seal her sensual sarcophagus, our ghastly last earthly embrace. Later that day, they found us both naked there, kissed my bride deep inside, then the chaos ensued. End of poem. Okay, and Neutron, if we can start with you.
Yeah, sure. Look, I have to be honest, when I first read this, I was a bit taken aback. I was unsure where Greg was going with this, and I was like, did I just read that? But then I thought, when does the soul leave this mortal coil? And it made me think, well, yes, it is a taboo. It is taboo to a certain extent, and an unexpected offering for the prompt, I might add. It was clearly two lovers, and I thought it was very thought-provoking and a little tongue-in-cheek with the nod to the ensuing chaos. Two lovers eternally, one following the other into the void of the unknown. This lingered on the brain for longer than anticipated. Nicely done.
Great comment there, Neutron. Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a really interesting take on prompt three to look at the son, father, dying, death motif and turn it upside down and transform it into one of two lovers. Quite strong offering of dark poetry. Great storytelling. And I love that close. Kiss my bride deep inside and the chaos ensued. To me, it had an Ophelia Hamlet vibe that was simultaneously tragic and eerily satisfying. So very well done. And, Bobby, your thoughts?
Seriously? I'm not going to ponder this one too deeply. I'm not, like Neutron said, I've taken aback a little bit. I'm not used to reading poetry about necrophilia. It's difficult to listen, to think of it in poetic terms. It's a very well-written piece. I mean, the use of vocabulary and language. But I think it's one of those things where you either like it or you don't. And it's like one of those movies what I've seen, and I don't think I'm going to see it again. I don't think I'm going to read it again.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bobby. And Dex, I'll give you a final word on this.
I thought it was a brilliant rainbow, and Bobby said you either like it or you don't. I don't know. I just thought, to be honest with you, I thought it was a brilliant write. It was just, it was so dark and twisted. I really admire somebody to be able to, lack of better words, kind of thrust themselves into this mindset, this position, and to be able to spin it that way in a prompt. I think that makes you a brilliant writer.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to learn something to admire it.
Right. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Thanks. So, Bobby, I'm going to get you up next for Where My Life Reverse.
Yeah, this is not going to be new to a lot of listeners, but when I looked at the prompts, one of them spoke to me on a personal level, and that was the prompt that said that scars have the strange power to remind us that our past is real. And you see in the AM that I dedicated this to my grandmother, and she was one of those people that firmly believed that every moment of your life, whatever you lived, you carry it with you and you wear it proudly because it's not easy to make it through life. What's the joke? You may not make it through life alive. So I read things like that about the scars reminding us of our past being real, and that always is a grabber for me. So that's why this is not a new write, but it emotionally, that's where it took me. So I wear my life. You look at my face, at my hands, you see wrinkles, creases, lines, scars, skin leathery and cracked. I look in the mirror. I see personality, character, beauty, a life lived thoroughly, completely, and because I have lived my life, I wear my life. You look at my face. You see the tough road, the hard knock story. I look in the mirror. I see no stone unturned, worlds conquered, unexplored roads traversed, hundreds of tears, thousands of smiles. Because I have lived my life, I wear my life. You look at my hands, my fingers, rough, gnarled, and stiffened. I see hands that have been used, feeding, planting, painting, writing, creating beauty, gifting comfort, helping, renewing heart and soul, breath and being. Because I have lived my life, I wear my life. You look at my body, back bent, shoulders stooped, the ravages of time. You see suffering endured. I look at my body, I see adversity survived, misfortunes overcome, wisdom earned, glorious couplings, love given, love received. Because I have lived my life, I wear my life. You look into my eyes, you see a time-worn weariness, hardship, age. I see my soul, my spirit, through eyes that have witnessed the canals of Venice, the snow-covered Matterhorn, sunrise on Haleakala, sunsets over the Mojave. Because I have lived my life, I wear my life. You look at me and see an old woman. I see a monument to a life well-lived, not spent swathed in cotton wool, insulated from life and love, instead taking risks, going out on the limb, making a difference not only in my own life but in other lives as well, all the while living my life. Every line, every wrinkle, every crease, every scar, a roadmap, my journey through a life well-lived, a precious testimony to each of my seasons, a personal history built on friends lost and truths found, a living memory of every person, every place, every experience. And because I have lived my life, every year, every day, every moment of it, I wear my life. End poem.
Great read there, Bobby. And let's get you some comments. Neutron, we'll start up with you, Ken.
I've heard this poem before. I don't actually mind that. I really enjoy this poem. I particularly was drawn to this section here. You look into my eyes, you see a time-worn weariness, hardship, age. I see my soul, my spirit through eyes that witness, and then it continues. It's so very true. And I think especially these days as a woman, it's very easy to be put on the shelf earlier than you might otherwise have wanted to be. And I think you draw that conclusion that, yes, this body may be weary, but it's through living. And not just surviving, not just coasting, it's through living. And this section here, you see the tough road, the hard knock story, I look in the mirror, I see no stone unturned. And there's a resilience expressed in this right, and I really commend you for it. Well done.
Great comment, Neutron. Yeah, I had read this piece before, and it struck me very powerfully before. The interesting thing is that now I'm kind of at a different point in my life, so I was struck by a different portion. And that was this part about, here is it, there we go. Instead, taking risks, going out on a limb, making a difference, not only in my own life, but in other lives as well, all the while living my life. And I kind of feel like, for better or for worse, that is what I am doing right now. And it kind of got to me, and I got a little bit emotional at that part, which is always a good thing in poetry. So thanks so much, Bobby, for bringing it to us.
Well, thank you much so much for the
Absolutely. And Dex, your thoughts?
You know, I felt like this poem was almost like a picture, an image from like a Dust Bowl farmer or something, something from a certain time period where it's like nostalgic, but it's just powerful. I feel like this poem is the narrative of a almost like a timeless image. So very well done, Bobby.
Thank you. It was actually a narrative of my grandmother's life.
Thanks so much. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is one of those poems that's worth hearing over and over again. It's so beautiful. It has such a strong emotional impact. I like how every stanza is about how other people perceive someone and how they perceive themselves. And how oftentimes people who are elderly are judged when they've earned their scars, they've earned their wrinkles. And the fact that this is a write about your grandmother makes it even more just, you know, pull at the heartstrings. But what I like about this write is that anybody can relate to this. And you know, to me, this speaks of the spirit of any strong woman who goes into her elderly years with a confidence in herself and the journey that she's been through. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Thanks, Richard. So, Pam, would you be able to read Jessica Rand's piece, please?
Absolutely. I Am Hungry, Even If, by Jessica Rand. I was satiated before I took a dip in the pious chance of this maddening world. Now the black perennial snow is tormenting the body in the poles of the night. The doors are closed. No escape for the withered purple roses to tiptoe on the ground, the worms making their sheds and eating the pages where I scribble. My words ditch me. They outpour with a
screeching sound. I am hungry even if you serve me moon on a silver platter, washing away the sins bound to the chains of the strangled past. I am hungry even if sun's blazing flames fizzle out in shallow air, whispering a cool breeze on my torn skin like water lily leaves dancing, bobbing on the lake, tranquility reigning in the sea, putting the fishes in a siesta. I am hungry, even if you make me a garden where the world seeks refuge, where hummingbirds dance, the lilacs nod, and the bees come flocking in pale, scented gloaming, withered autumn leaves hugging the lake, scent of lips kissing passionately, causing an uproar in a feeble heart. I am hungry. Nothing can quench my thirst but love. Like a captured water, you hold me in your cupped hand. I flow on your palm. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Bobby, if we can start off with you.
Sure. This is one of the reasons I really enjoy these poetry exchanges. Is here's an author who took the very same prompt I did, and look at how differently his write has gone. So amazing the way he sees the comment about scars reminding you your past is real. And he's taken us on a different kind of a journey. And it's so beautifully written, very detail-oriented, very eloquent. I like the refrain, I am hungry even if. I am hungry even if. And it seems like if you could offer him the universe, the only thing that would sate his hunger is love.
Quick comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Captain in relation to the beautiful imagery in this piece. And I did enjoy the repetition of the hunger refrain. It does build the piece. It was an interesting take on the prompt. I actually couldn't find a favorite part because it was such a strong write. I'm really glad that Jessica Rand penned for the contest. The opener, though, really set up the tone for the whole piece. And I get the feeling that we as humans generally never satiate our hunger. So the fact that he finishes the poem with his hunger being quenched or his thirst being quenched by love is just a beautiful way to end it.
Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I kind of wish I had actually paid attention in the AN to what prompt he had written to, because I might have taken my observation of it, you know, differently. But how I originally saw this was as a personification of war, war being the hungry one, and how war can't be stopped unless we all agree to love each other. And it doesn't matter how much we try to go back to the Garden of Eden, or we're not going to get back there. We can only hope to love each other enough to kill the idea of war. However, given that I now actually am paying attention to the quote he wrote, to scars have the strange part to remind us that our past is real, I do see this in the whole idea of, as was mentioned, you know, by Bobby, is the idea of that healing power of love, and that thirst, that hunger for love, and how it's something we all need, especially when we're dealing with the scars in the past that hurt so much. But definitely just amazing imagery and metaphors throughout, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I too love this piece. I am hungry. Nothing can quench my thirst but love. Like captured water, you hold me in your cupped hands. I flow on your palm. I think he captures the pain of longing embedded in all love stories. Wonderful lyricism throughout and very nicely crafted, just a great piece. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Okay, so I'll give the next one a read, and then Dex, I'm going to get you up after that. So this one is by D.L. Howard, and it's called Lost. I've lost the dream of everything, be it home or family or skill. For every room holds tight to memory, and every memory is tainted by the shadows of happier times when you were here. My strength of arm grows ever weaker. My wit has all but left me, and sleep. Sleep is like a mist that subdues all hope of finding my way again. Every thought of you cuts me, but I am happy to bleed if it means seeing you again. Oh, what I would give for that, to see you, to touch you, to smell your hair, to hear the sound of Dad on your lips. I ache beyond measure, beyond reason, beyond the depth of language to express. And so I am left with innumerable tears and the unintelligible sounds that accompany them. You are my heart, and now my heart is missing. The beating in my chest is false. Surely if it beats, you were still with me, but you were gone. And this thumping is a mockery, a hollow thing, a wounded, hollow thing that serves only to remind me of your absence. My God, how I miss you. Oh, Garen, my beautiful son, I miss you.
Nicely read there, Neutron. This is one of those pieces that just, it's almost like C.L. Howard has taken us into this private chamber of his grieving and led us into that sacred space and quite poignant, truly heartbreaking to lose someone so close, so dear, so integral to who you are, and that is exactly the spirit of McCarthy's quote. And I'm hoping that the articulation of grieving through his art has proved cathartic for him, and I certainly felt it, and I'm enriched by having read it. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean to hear, you know, my every memory is tainted. You know, it's you know, when you're so close with somebody, you know, it's almost like all of your favorite songs you've shared from them, or else you've taught to them. All of your favorite moments you've shared with them, you know, and to have something happen, obviously in the fashion that it's happened to the loved one of CL, it just seems like, you know, everything in life has gone a certain, has turned a certain pitch. And I fully agree with what Richard has says that, you know, I can only hope that writing has helped in this whole entire process, because this was just such a devastating poem to read. It's very difficult to comment on. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Zach. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was drawn to this section here. Sleep is like a mist that subdues all hope of finding my way again. Every thought of you cuts me, but I am happy to bleed if it means seeing you again. It was a deeply moving piece, and I choked up a bit while reading it. I think reading these poems aloud gives them more power. I'm sorry for your loss, Chris, and this was definitely grief splayed on paper in an honest and raw manner. I can only empathize with your loss through your gut-wrenching poem. And I really commend you for writing to this prompt. It would have been very difficult. And as I will reinforce the statement that I hope that it has at least been cathartic rather than a purely melancholic release. You're in my thoughts. Well done.
Great comment. And let's take one more. Pam, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is one of those rites that just brings tears to my eyes. It has such an impact, and I always, you know, I just feel so sorry for his loss, and he beautifully expresses his pain, and you're right there, Richard. It does feel like getting a glimpse into somebody's room, you know, being invited into such a personal moment as this kind of grief. And wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And with that, Neutron, I am turning it back to you for our next piece.
Thank you, Richard. So, Dex, I've got your piece on the board now when you're ready.
Okay, this is an older one. This is called An Ugly Transformation by Duke of St. Paul Dexter Bailey, but I feel like it fit tonight. This is no longer my bathroom floor. I open my eyes, flooded with tears as I wipe them with my hands. The air has a chill and the breeze carries a mist. The floor is stone and I can't tell if that is my mirror light or an eclipse. This is no longer my bathroom floor, a user's Wizard of Oz. Have I finally bought the farm? Lost my previous house, my job, my life. An inner feeling of peace, like a broom to the spider webs inside my mind. I set up. This is the bathroom floor, the bathroom I recognize. See the phone I smashed next to the toilet. Recollection now comes pulsating back, and my account had been garnished. IRS took every cent. On the sink lies a pipe, red lighter next to that. As I take another hit, I realize where I went, past the point of no return, deep in the depths, so shedding every excess, baggage of life I had dreamt, family, success. Nothing no longer matters except this fiendish secret that I've kept. As I relax and let it tighten its cold grip around my neck. Since then my worries have run, daring not to look back, excluding one. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. Dex. And if we can start with Bobby, your thoughts.
A very powerful piece. Terrific storytelling. I mean, from the first line, you want to know where it's going and you want to go with it. But it tells a story of such pain and personal anguish. It makes the reader wonder what the cause of this personal torment is. I like that you don't tell us because it makes us think, but you do tell us that it has caused you to resort to something that will blunt the edges and numb the pain. On the sink lies a pipe and a red lighter next to that. I take another hit. I realize where I went. And I think that at the end, the protagonist realizes that at the end of the trip, the problem is still going to exist. And this is a really good write.
Great comment, Bobby. And
Neutron,
your thoughts.
I think this was perhaps one of the most honest poems I've seen about addiction in a long time. You don't dance around the metaphor. You put it right out there. I just remember when the one time I went to rehab, they were like, don't neg rave, which is basically where you live the glory days of your using. And they kind of said, like, you need to see the using through to the end. And I think this poem does exactly that. You know, that it will take, addiction will take priority over pretty much every aspect of your life if you let it. And it's something I've struggled with periodically, addiction, and I think switching the witch for the bitch, I think is the saying, that they that you may get rid of one addiction and replace it with another. At the moment, I've given up cigarettes and most of my vices, and I've gone back to food, so it's time to address the addiction part. But I think this is a very important poem, and very well done.
Thank you, Neutron. Great comment, Neutron. Yeah, Dex, I really love this piece. I felt it was a wonderful word painting on the pain of rock bottom. And I get that it's a substance rock bottom, but I too identified with it because I've had emotional rock bottom where I kind of just felt lost. And so I was right there with you on that bathroom floor. And it's just real strong, really strong writing. So thanks for bringing it to us.
Thank you, Richard. That meant a lot.
Absolutely. And Tam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a powerful and hard-hitting write. You know, it's interesting how many rock bottoms seem to happen on the bathroom floor. I really like a broom to the spider web inside my mind. I sit up, this is the bathroom I recognize. See the phone I smashed next to the toilet. Recollection now comes pulsating back. And the realization of how much addiction takes from you, you know, not only, you know, money, but also, you know, the people that you loved and trust often choose to walk away from you because they just don't know what to do. And so just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done, Dexter.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. And with that, Neutron, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
Thank you. Captain, would you be able to read Goronwy's poem?
I would. I'll tee it up here right now. Listening to Insomnia by Goronwy. Writing fictions for the clucks, telling lies with the hands of time, pointing out the moments of your lost days, chiming midnight's 12. Somewhere in the shades of darkness, listening to insomnia, talking to forgotten promises and patterns of my past. Not written in your contents or in the index page as the bells of dreams echo through your sleep, like clocks and mirrors reflecting hands at different times, counting down the minutes and hours of your chimes. In a hinterland of memory, a museum in the mind, things you left behind in the sound of many days. On the faces of clocks you can't turn back, who are the ghosts, the spirits left behind in a cauldron of the lost, brewed with fire and brimstone to bite you on the ass, rising from gray matter in the pantry of recall, useful only as a memory of forgotten guilt, stealing the space called happiness you want to keep, stalking the pathway of tomorrow's roads in footsteps left behind, opening the door marked keep sealed and well closed, walking with the insomnia of sleep. End poem.
Nicely read there, Bobby. Thanks. I thought this was like he was actually inside my nocturnal head. I identified with it from open to close. Especially like somewhere in the shades of darkness, listening to insomnia, talking to forgotten promises and the patterns of my past, not written in your contents or in the index page The bells, the dreams echo through your sleep, like clocks in the mirrors reflecting hands at different times, counting down the minutes in the hours of your chimes. I thought he accomplished quite a bit in this brevity. Very, very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it depicted the rumination so well. The almost obsessive nature of recall we are subjected to in the quiet and the still. And it was a great answer to the prompt. You forget what you want to remember, and you remember what you want to forget from the road. Very well done.
Absolutely. And let's take one more. Dexter, your thoughts?
Felt like it's almost like, you know, you've run so few of thoughts that you start to almost wonder, like, you know, what the clock is doing while you're not watching it. And so talk about, like, you know, one hand in insomnia and the other, you know, it's just wrapped around you. It's so lost in thought, you've run out of thought so much that that's where you're where it takes you. I thought it was a very well done piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, I'm turning it back to you for another one.
Okay, so I've got a short and sweet one. I will give this a read. It's by Art Poet, there's no SoundCloud. Okay, so it goes like this. Old black buzzard lies drying on Southern California slopes. This stinking carcass feeds coyotes until thirsty, ragged migrants walk by a silent line under starry skies. Feathers drift across the gray chaparral, past Colorado's anemic trickle into a dusty gulf, this once crushing flow now harnessed to grow green grass and soaker housing plats, mid-box store strip malls littering the desert palms, shining magnet to poor mixed-blood Latins. No country for this old man's sullen art. End poem.
Great read there, Neutron. Yeah, I really like this one. I loved how he ties the McCarthy landscape and so beautifully with the Dylan Thomas classic lines, no country for this old man's sullen art, indeed. I thought it was a well-constructed brevity and very well done. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is definitely a well-constructed brevity. I like how the main theme of it seems to be how the difficulty adjusting to change in one's own life and on a social, in a social, in a way in society. I like past Colorado's anemic trickle into a dusty gulf, the once crushing flow now harnessed. You know, I think that it can be just very challenging to see what you are used to feel like it's being taken away. So just a great write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, on second read, it almost sounds like the travel of illegal immigrants to the border or across the border. I'm not sure of the whether Colorado has anything to do with that. You guys would have to fill me in on that. But my favorite part was past Colorado's anemic trickle into a dusty gulf, this once crushing flow now harnessed to grow green grass and soaker housing plats. The imagery is dense, and it's a very well-constructed poem. And there is certainly no filler in this lean poem. Amazing.
Great comment, Neutron. And Bobby, I'll give you final word on this one.
I found this a very powerful, very visually profound piece. I've lived in Southern California. I've lived in Colorado. I found it interesting that the second stanza, past Colorado's anemic trickle into a dusty gulf, this once crushing flow now harnessed to grow green grass and soak a housing plats. I've been reading about the extreme drought conditions in Southern California, and things like Lake Powell, if it drops more than another 30 feet, the surrounding area will have no electricity. And I'm also reminded of the American obsession with turf lawns. You don't see that in Europe. And so the grow green grass and soak a housing plats, mid-box store strip malls littering the desert palms. I lived in the Mojave, and it just reminds me of how the visual imagery for this is, for me, it was very powerful because I saw how it reminds me how of humans tend to discard nature in favor of what is dubiously called progress, and they'll erect strip malls over beautiful desert pieces, and they'll prioritize the turf grass when the actual should be giving thirsty people water. The poignancy of this piece for me is very strong.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Neutron, to your question, so I think, and I could be wrong, but I think when he says past Colorado's anemic trickle into a dusty gulf, that he's referring to the Colorado River, which feeds into your thought of immigrants migrating over the Mexican border. And of course, you know, McCarthy wrote that border trilogy, right? The three novels, Blood Meridian, No Country for Old Men, and All the Pretty Horses. So I think you might be onto something there.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've got around 3 minutes left, as opposed to trying to rush through another poem. We're 2.5 minutes left. I'm going to turn it over to Pam. Tell us about what's coming up in the next half hour.
All right. A half hour from this show is Into the Darkness, where we have poetry inspired by quotes from the Friday the 13th movie series. And, you know, so it's going to just be a fun, dark way to enjoy and celebrate Friday the 13th.
I didn't even realize it was Friday the 13th until you posted the contest, Pam. So.
Clever.
that does sound like a lot of fun. So, great. Well, thank you so much for that. And we've got a little bit of time left, so I will go ahead and plug Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. We've got open mic with Fill My Eyes with Poetry and Laurent, and please join us for that. Bring your poems. Doesn't have to be on any particular topic. It's open mic. And I want to close out the way I always do, which is by thanking everyone for joining us, Laurent and Bobby and Dexter, Pam, and of course, special thanks to my co-host, Neutron. Much appreciated. I want to give thanks to Fill My Eyes for all the work she does in the background, making this show happen. SoundCloud, posting them. And special final thanks to the poets that write for these shows every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. So keep being inspired. Keep bringing us the great poetry, and we'll do our part and get it read on the air. So, that's what I wanted to accomplish tonight, a reading of poetry inspired by one of my favorites, Cormac McCarthy. I thought it was just dynamite show. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Richard. You too.
Night. Okay.